Federal News Radio's national security correspondent, J.J. Green, is here. J.J., you've been following the U.S.-Mexico border situation for several years now, and I appreciate you taking what you've learned and what we heard this morning in this news conference.
My pleasure.
What did you think as you listened to Secretary Napolitano, the justice official, Deputy Attorney General Ogden, and Deputy Secretary of State Steinberg talk about these new things? Did they sound new to you?
No, they're not new, but they're very aggressive, and they're things that need to be done in concert, things that need to be done together.
Mm-hmm.
You can do a lot of different things, and over the years, a number of different things have been done piecemeal, one at a time. Of all of these things should be a very powerful response to a problem that's been festering for several years, as you mm-hmm. mentioned. When you start looking at the border between the U.S. and Mexico, there have been situations and instances, I think in the last 5 years at least, where people have talked specifically about tons of guns going south and tons of drugs coming north, and the two approaches from the two countries have not been necessarily on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
We've been hearing both governments say we want to attack the problem, but they weren't really attacking it effectively. Hopefully this collective input of resources from the U.S. working, I guess, more effectively with Calderon in Mexico should address the issues.
Do you think it's fair to say that our relationship with Mexico is more complex now than it's been at, it seems to me, any time in recent memory? Is that a fair statement, do you think?
Well, I think it's fair in this sense that when you look at it from a national security perspective, I don't think a lot of people have realized the significance of our economic relationship with Mexico and how you can't disconnect the Mexican economic relationship from the national security relationship. They have to go together and they have to stay together. There's no way to look at them independent of each other. And I think that's in many ways what had been going on for a long time. People were looking at these two things separately.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking with an intelligence official last week who said one of the reasons why this whole situation with Mexico has gotten to where it is because we have to continue to look at the drug and the gun problem as a criminal problem. We can't look at it, he said, as a country, as something else. And
mm-hmm.
he was speaking in code there, basically,
yeah.
saying that we can't look at this as anything more than that, because if we do, it's going to change the way in which the U.S. is legally bound to deal with the problem,
mm-hmm.
i.e., war.
Exactly. Well, and that's the thing I was discussing with one of my colleagues in the newsroom when we were talking about the fact that this news conference took place and you were going to be coming in to talk about it, is the president has alluded to the idea that it may be necessary to have people down there. The governor of Texas, Rick Perry, has asked for troops to be assigned to the border because his National Guard people are not available or not equipped to deal with the firepower. And I continue to be mystified by the fact that this issue doesn't get any more attention nationally than it seems to be getting, because the idea of a sitting governor of one of our largest states geographically saying my internal people don't have enough firepower to deal with this, I need military presence inside our own borders, strikes me as extremely significant, and yet it doesn't seem to be getting a lot of coverage.
Well, it's going to get the coverage now, I can guarantee you that,
mm-hmm.
because there is evidence that the Mexican drug cartels have actually set up shop and are operating seemingly quite profitably in about 200 cities across the U.S., and you can look anywhere from Atlanta, Georgia, to Sheboygan,
mm-hmm.
Wisconsin, to Montana,
mm-hmm.
Yakima, Washington, places you probably wouldn't expect to find Mexican drug cartels operating. They are there. And when you start looking at where it's coming from, where the entry point is, it's Texas, it's Arizona, and in California. When you look at the fact that there have been tunnels dug over time, there are all sorts of border vulnerabilities. When you look at the Rio Grande, it's all got to be looked at in the same context, and
mm-hmm.
What Rick Perry and what other people, other governors and state officials have been saying in Texas, Arizona, and California for a while are starting to hit home to people, because they're starting to realize now that people are dying in
mm-hmm.
this country at the hands of these drug cartel members,
yes.
whereas people before didn't seem to get that.
That's a situation that was brought home literally by my parents, who live now in Pennsylvania. My brother lives in Phoenix, and they visited him in January and February and came home and said that the coverage, at least in that area, is significant because of exactly what you're saying. People being kidnapped, U.S. Mm-hmm. citizens mm-hmm. being kidnapped in Phoenix mm-hmm. by the members of these cartels and found dead.
Yeah, and you know what's... And I always get teased about being scary, bringing scary news, but you know, I don't get any joy out of doing that. But I do take pride in doing the job that I'm supposed to do and trying to do it well. And one of the things in order to do that well is to take a look at the good and the bad.
Mm-hmm.
And the bad thing about this whole situation is that this isn't the worst of it. It hasn't gotten as worse as it's going to get based on the conversations that I've been having with intelligence and law enforcement personnel. It's not just... And I want to say this properly. It's not just people who many in America don't think matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just people who may be here illegally, because they do matter to me, and mm-hmm. they should matter to everyone because they're human beings. But it's not just people who broke the law to get here that are becoming victims of these kidnappings and these killings.
Mm-hmm.
And unless this is dealt with in a whole manner,
mm-hmm.
The entire picture looked at and dealt with, there are going to be most likely situations where average everyday people, soccer moms and soccer dads and kids and other people, are going to get caught up in this violence. And this is the reason why I think Secretary Napolitano is trying to take such a wide approach to dealing with it.
I think if we learn anything by looking at the situation in Mexico itself, extrapolate it to what's possible now that you've said that over 200 cities in the United States essentially have chapters of this organization
yeah.
working, to see what's happening in Mex today, what seem to be random kidnappings, random killings, are at least possible if something like this isn't done. I want to talk some more about this and some of the other implications of the complicated U.S.-Mexico relationship when we come back. Federal News Radio's national security correspondent J.J. Green is my guest, and we're talking about the new initiatives announced at the White House today by the Homeland Security Department, Justice Department, and State Department. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose.
Are you a victim? If you have credit card debts, are making mortgage payments or car payments, you are a victim. But now there's a way you can stop being a victim and start living debt-free. Hi, I'm Tony Manganiello, publisher of the Debt-Free and Prosperous Living System, and I'll send you a powerful free tape revealing how easy it is if you call today.
I owed over $30,000 in credit card debt, and today, only a year and a half later, I owe no money to the credit card companies.
You can get out of debt using just the money you already make following my proven debt elimination system.
I will be able to pay off my house in approximately 2.5 years on a 30-year mortgage.
My system doesn't just consolidate your debt, it eliminates it. It's amazing how easy it really is. Call for your free tape, 1-800-995-9844. Get out of debt and live life on your terms, not theirs. For your free tape, call 1-800-995-9844. That's 1-800-995-9844.
Get your red on, Nats fans. Opening day at Natstown is almost here. Get your tickets now for the April 13th home opener versus the world champion Phillies. The game starts at 3:05, but you'll want to be there early. Live bands and fireworks, face painting and balloon artists. The afternoon is packed with entertainment for all ages. And be one of the first 20,000 fans at the game and you'll receive an opening day hat courtesy of Masson. Buy your tickets online at nationals.com or call 888-632-NATS. And get ready for a fun-filled opening day celebration at Natstown.
On the next episode of the Fred Federal Show.
I've never been blindfolded to go on an interview before.
Security is of the utmost concern. I spend most of my time in our new telepresence suite or the GJIT Situation Room.
What about your CTO, Euphrates Green?
You ever heard of Profound Presence? Euphrates was instrumental in its creation.
Do you mean the new system that challenged DOE's Roadrunner supercomputer?
The Fred Federal Show, this week on Federal News Radio.
I'm Amy Morris with a preview of today's Daily Debrief. huge proposed cuts at the Postal Service. We get reaction from the National Association of Letter Carriers. Rob Neighbors with OMB telling us about the guidance offered to agencies for how to spend those stimulus funds. And what's the word on the federal street? We get the inside scoop from senior correspondent Mike Causey. All that and much more this afternoon from 3 until 7 on The Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabeck and Amy Morris.
Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Federal News Radio National Security Correspondent J.J. Green. We're talking about the initiative at which it was announced at the White House today. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano and officials of the State Department and Justice Department talking about what the country will be doing along the U.S.-Mexico border. And I mentioned the complicated relationship, seemingly more complicated now than ever, because when President Bush came into office in 2001, we seemed to be entering an era of good feelings with Mexico, so to speak. JJ, President Bush had been governor of Texas, of course, had a relationship with, at the time, President Vicente Fox of Mexico because of his time as governor. That didn't turn out to be the situation that a lot of people expected, because they wound up clashing on a lot of policies that they had seemingly agreed on when President Bush had been governor, and not as much progress had been made as we'd hoped. Now, you had talked about during the break about the idea, too, that it had been our country's policy for a long time that these drug lords eventually will just fight and kill each other. And it's turned out, as we look now, that that's not the case.
Wasn't officially the policy, but that was the hope.
Mm-hmm.
One of the issues that the U.S. dealt with for a long time was Colombia. And it had an official policy with Colombia where U.S. assets from DEA and other agencies were sent there to work with the Colombian government to deal with this issue, because it was essentially holding Colombia hostage.
Mm-hmm.
And it was indeed one of the most dangerous places in the world to go. Mexico has never been rated that way or never been given that designation because of its neighbor status, because of what it would say, one, about its relationship to the U.S., and two,
yeah,
what it would require from U.S. national security and intelligence officials. Secondly, the problem in Mexico with kidnappings and extortion and all of that is not very different today than it was 10 years ago. Having spent some significant time there, I can tell you, certain people going to Mexico's city or to any other city were kidnapped going looking for taxi cabs just mm-hmm. as they are now.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in the right place at the wrong time and you don't look right, you don't have the right look about you, shall I say, the right complexion, or if you look like you're a, quote, gringo,
mm-hmm.
You were a target. And that's not changed at all. What's happened now is that much of this mentality has spread way out beyond there. There are situations out in some of the states where governors have been murdered. Lots of police chiefs have been murdered, police officials, military officials have been murdered because of the rampant and growing corruption in so many places. But I spoke with Arturo Sarcujan, who is Mexico's ambassador to the U.S. I spoke with him 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he at that time said, we have got to get the U.S. to look more closely at the gun situation,
mm-hmm.
the weapons that are coming into Mexico. And it hasn't been done. We're getting to this point now where people are starting to finally take a look at it. But the problem, Francis, from their perspective, is that we've let it go too long.
Mm-hmm.
And had we dealt with it beforehand, as you were alluding to during this perhaps relationship between Fox and Bush and Calderon and Fox later, Bush later,
mm-hmm.
perhaps something would have taken place. But I don't think either country can blame the other more.
Yeah. It seems like there's plenty of I don't know if the word blame is even appropriate, but there are situations that could have been handled better all the way around. You mentioned Colombia, and I think everybody that has paid any attention to the whole guns and drugs and violence issue is aware of the fact that we've been trying to work in various South American countries for years and years and years to stem the supply of drugs. How does that play into the situation with Mexico? Is some of this drug supply that's being run through the border now homegrown, literally, in Mexico? Or is Mexico still kind of a stopover in this chain from South America?
I don't know that Mexico has the capability to do the poppy business, to do the kind of business, the same kind of drug business that is done in the tropical climes of Colombia. Mexico itself is tropical, but again, you have to have the right conditions in the right places to grow and produce this stuff that basically feeds the cocaine and the heroin business. I don't know that Mexico has the right environment for that. What I do know is it's certainly a place that is being looked at as drug dealers, drug cartels look to expand using technology, their capabilities to grow, to produce, and to make more money.
Mm-hmm.
Mexico is a big, wide open place. Lots of people there need work, and there are tropical climates there in some parts of that country, lush places where these types of activities could possibly take place.
Yeah, it strikes me as having all of those elements that someone would be looking for. Lots of area, lots of geographical area in the country that is really unsupervised. You know, you could really go in there and build an empire in a fairly short period of time, fairly inexpensively, and find people to work the fields.
Yeah, the thing, though, that the Drug Enforcement Administration and others are looking at is not so much Mexico for that now. They're looking at Bolivia. That's really what is of great concern to many in the intelligence community. Is Bolivian President Evo Morales. A number of people that I know have actually referred to him as a cocolero. And, you know, basically he was it's a person who deals in that industry, performing a certain job.
Mm-hmm.
That's precisely what he did before he got involved in politics. So he's a real bootstrap kind of rags-to-riches situation here. But he has not necessarily, in the minds of many intelligence and law enforcement authorities in this country and others, taken a strong enough stand against illegal drugs in that country, leaving the door open for the drug lords fleeing Colombia to go there.
That's a fascinating issue that I want to take up with you when we come back. We've got to take another break, but I want to talk about the integration of the drug lords into the political processes in some of these countries, because this is something that at least I haven't been aware of up until the last couple of years, where they've started to very unabashedly go legitimate, as they say, and become part of the process that oversees the enforcement of the laws in these countries. Let's chat about that a little bit when we come back. Federal News Radio national security correspondent J.J. Green on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, continuing our discussion in a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose.
If you work for or have worked for the federal government, I want to tell you about an organization that's been around for over 80 years. It's NARF. Organized in 1921 to protect and enhance the retirement and health benefits of federal employees, NARF wants you to know that laws can change and so can your retirement security. Protect it by joining NARF, the only association that's dedicated to making sure your retirement is secure when you reach retirement. Don't wait until after you retire to join NARF. Check out their website at www.narfe.org. You'll see that NARF is a great investment for your retirement future. Then click on the Join Now button and join hundreds of thousands of federal retirees and employees as a NARF member. That's www.narfe.org. Or call 1-800-627-3394 and ask them to send you some information. Join now. NARF, your best retirement investment.
And now, the Security Tech Report, brought to you by Raytheon.
Earlier this year, a file containing the blueprints and avionics package for Marine One was found on a computer in Iran. It looks like the files were compromised after a government contractor used a peer-to-peer file-sharing program to store them. Experts have noticed an increase in virus and denial-of-service attacks, on sites such as Facebook and Twitter. Attacks in the third quarter last year shot up more than 15%. I'm J.J. Green.
From the ground to space to cyberspace, Raytheon is focused on a vital mission, protecting the information and infrastructures that are critical to our national security. No matter the threat, Raytheon's cybersecurity solutions perform, protecting against disruption, espionage, and sabotage every second of every day. Cybersecurity, just another way Raytheon innovation is keeping Americans safe.
The Cybersecurity Report brought to you by Lockheed Martin.
File sharing software, you know, like LimeWire. It's great for trading music and pictures. That's why millions of people use it. The trouble is file sharing leaves your entire hard drive open for sharing if someone types in the right keywords. Federal government offices don't allow file sharing programs, but any organization you collaborate or trade data with might have it somewhere along the line. So the best way to avoid problems is to encrypt information that leaves your agency and make sure the recipient keeps it encrypted.
It happens millions of times every day. Cyber attacks aimed at the networks that are the brains and backbone of every government program and military mission. At Lockheed Martin, we understand the importance of cybersecurity. That's why we build security into every system we develop and integrate. Assuring that our customers can carry out their missions without disruptions is all a question of how. And it is the how that makes all the difference. Lockheed Martin. We never forget who we're working for.
Learn what lies ahead for the new administration at ERMCO 2009. The General Services Administration's ERMCO Conference is the annual government-only gathering of agency, career, and political leaders. At ERMCO, you will hear about the new administration's plans and priorities and embrace change by learning about what lies ahead. Plan now to attend ERMCO on April 19th through the 22nd in beautiful Cambridge, Maryland. To register, call 202-237-0300 or visit www.ermco.gov.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is National Security Correspondent J.J. Green. And as always, I'm grateful for your time and your knowledge about all of these issues. We're talking about the initiative that was put forth today by Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano and others at the White House. And later this afternoon, you'll be able to see that event in its entirety on the in-depth page on federalnewsradio.com and see exactly what Homeland Security Department, the State Department, and Justice Department are talking about when it comes to this new initiative. But before the break, JJ, we were talking about perceptions, at least my personal perceptions, about the involvement of drug figures in the political process in some of these countries, especially in South America. My perception has always been that it was kind of the political establishment versus the drug establishment in these countries. And if you were a member of one, it kind of automatically excluded you from membership in the other. You mentioned in the last segment the president of Bolivia, who is kind of an exception to that rule. And there seem to be more and more of these where people who have been heavily involved and publicly involved in the drug trade in some of these countries are now becoming very prominent also in the political process. And I wonder about what the potential ramifications are there for our relationship for the State Department's execution of diplomacy with some of these countries.
Well, I can't say realistically, Francis, that I know of any other heads of state or powerful political figures that have been involved in the drug trade, save for Evo Morales. I do know that there have been allegations that other presidents and other powerful political figures throughout the world have some connection, but I can't think of any others who actually have allegedly worked in the day-to-day trade, as Morales reportedly did. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you this, in terms of the relationship between drugs and politics, if you go back to the 1980s, there was a plane crash in a jungle, South America, I believe. Pilot was a guy named Barry Seal. That particular airplane crashed. And it, if you look back, if you do some research on this, you'll find that this plane was connected to the United States government and a guy by the name of Colonel Oliver North.
Mm-hmm.
And the Iran-Contra mm-hmm. process was involved in this.
Yes.
Drugs, arms for drugs, drugs for arms, something like something of that nature. Here's the deal. At that point in time, there was a serious war going on with the Colombian cartels. There were three of them. There was one, the Medellin cartel, led by a guy who's in a prison in Marion, Illinois now, Carlos Leyra Rivas. There was a second guy who was one of the Ochoa brothers, George Ochoa, Jorge. And there was a third guy, Pablo Escobar. Pablo Escobar, actually, as a sitting member, as a reigning member of a cartel, was elected to the parliament in Colombia during that time frame. He later ended up, he died in a shootout with authorities, but he rose to the very top of the drug trade, and it translated into success for him because of the money that he had in the political process. And this is one of the things that a lot of intelligence and security officials are looking at these days,
mm-hmm.
is the connection between money. So I don't think it's the drugs. I think it's the money
mm-hmm.
that makes the entree a little bit easier, the ability to cross over between the two.